hello everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
Good evening. My name is Sausan. This is the Arabic name, which is the Arabic version of Susan. So you can call me Susan or Sue. It's easier. I prefer Sue. Yeah.
Good to meet you.
Thank you, sir. Well, I'm going to start by introducing myself first. I'm Susan Maher. I am an Egyptian lady and a wife and a mother of two little boys. Murad is 10 years old and Salim is almost 7. I was born and raised in Egypt to a very understanding father and supportive father. And a very strong and unbreakable mother. She's very strong personality. I had one sister. Her name is Nancy. Sadly, she passed away 3 years ago. She was my only sister. I have no brothers. Well, currently I'm working as an English teacher. And this is my 9th year as an English teacher. I teach English for grade 7. Very, very difficult age to deal with. Not easy at all. I work in a British international school. So my students are actually Egyptians, but their families choose this educational system for them because unfortunately it's so much better than our current educational system. You know, the overpopulation problem, it influenced the education or educational process badly. You know, just imagine one classroom with more than 80 students, 80. It's insane. And one teacher, it's insane. So that's why now we have in Egypt more than educational system. Like, we have the American international system, and we have with the American diploma, and we have the British international system with also the British certificate and the high school. Before working as a teacher, I used to work as a tour guide.
Oh my gosh!
But not as good as him by any way, by Mr. Ate, by any way, no. And this was before the revolution. But you know, the tourism field has badly influenced after the revolution and the political problems that we had. So I had to change my career. So I started to be a teacher, and then I started to be a teacher 9 years ago. Now I would like you to introduce yourselves to me, and also you can tell me briefly, everyone, what's the most interesting thing you have seen in Egypt till now? Like something interesting you have seen that really, you know, you want to tell us about. Start by you, ma'am.
Oh, I don't have time to think.
All right. Take your time.
Okay. My name is Jean Farmer. The most interesting thing. Gosh, it's hard to go first. Just the degree of history that's present, I think it's just pretty incredible.
Yeah, and did you like study something about Egyptian history in the school when you were young?
I think maybe 5th or 6th grade.
We got
the ancient civilizations.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. So it's just a dream to sit in front of you after all these years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you, sir?
I'm her husband, Mark Farmer.
Yes.
I hadn't realized there were pyramids in the midst of Cairo.
Okay.
I thought they were way out
In
the country.
Yeah, so it's a surprise, you know, because we always take the pictures from the desert side,
right.
From the city side, you know, and then when you come here, it's a surprise, guess what, at the end of the street, you know.
Right. House is right up against it.
Yeah, they just stopped them recently, finally they woke up and they started to, all right, what about you, Matt?
My name's Carol.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know a lot about Egypt. I didn't really have it in history. I had American history, American history, then world history, taught by our football coach. So I'm really happy to learn more. We've only been here 3 days.
Yeah.
So I'm wanting to open my heart to learn more.
Wow. Yeah, what about you?
My name is Mercedes.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've been most impressed about, and unfortunately I don't remember the name of it, but the ancient, it's not really an obelisk, but in the museum we saw this relic that was about 6,000-7,000 years old.
All right, yeah.
The front and back?
Yeah.
The Narmer Palette.
Narmer Palette, okay.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That. Yeah. I mean, you have a lot of things that are even older, but yeah. That's like, wow.
Yeah. Prehistoric, right? This is a prehistoric piece.
Archaic, just
archaic,
the first dynasty, just the first.
We're back to Mark.
My name's Jenny, and I've seen so many interesting things, many ancient things, but also modern things that are... I was just watching, you know, as we were driving in the bus, watching people go by on the highway, and I saw a man
the
who had, he was like a maybe a food delivery guy on a motorcycle, and he'd used like old CDs as reflectors in the back of his box on the back of his thing, and I thought, gosh, that's so clever.
Yes, that's so smart.
Hi, my name is Carol, and I'm a retired teacher.
Really? Hello?
And what I know about Egypt is that this is a place I've always wanted to come. I'm here.
Yes, sure.
Yeah, I told the other folks earlier. It was the National Geographic is my parents. It's my parents doing because they subscribed to National Geographic when I was a young girl, 8-9 years old, opening the book and seeing all this about Egypt. I said, one day I'm going to be here. And so
here
and
here you are.
Yeah, I'm glad.
Great, very glad too. What about you?
Hello, Sue, I'm Ken.
Hello.
I'm her husband.
Hi.
Retired teacher and building contractor.
Okay.
So I did those two things, mostly teaching though, in an outdoor environmental program.
Mm.
So working with sixth grade out in nature and teaching them the basics of how the earth works, you know.
Okay.
Systems of the planet. Mm. Anyway, I'm happy to be here. I'm amazed at how friendly the people seem to be. Everyone I meet is greeting us, welcoming us.
And they're smiling because we're so famous among all Arabian nations that we are smiling people.
I'm amazed at the population here too. That really surprised me on how many people are here in Cairo.
The density.
It's huge. So I had no idea about that. And I love the history here too, the ancient history. I just couldn't get over the museum. That was fantastic.
Yeah. What was it, the Egyptian or the civilization?
The Egyptian Museum.
Oh,
yeah,
I understand.
So
don't come. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what about you?
My name is Vicky, and what are we supposed to say?
It was the most interesting thing you have seen in Egypt till now.
Oh, that's hard to answer. There have been so many interesting things, but I guess for me, I really was always wanting to see the pyramids and the Sphinx, and I did, and it was wonderful.
Great.
Really.
Did you expect the Sphinx to be that size, or expected it to be smaller or bigger?
Well, I didn't think it would be smaller.
Okay.
I think maybe it could have been bigger, but it doesn't. It's hard to get a good photograph of it and show its power in front of all those pyramids.
Mm.
I was hoping for a better angle so that I could get it all in one.
And the lighting.
But anyway, that's wonderful.
Yes.
Who can complain?
Yeah. I was going to also say the population coming in on the plane and just seeing housing developments one after another. And just when I looked up the population on Google, just when I got here, it also showed not the current one, but I think about 10 years prior.
Yeah.
It had like doubled or something.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, sure. We just woke up to find
them.
Yeah.
Hard to understand.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. 24 million in 10 years.
Yes. The past 10 years,
yeah.
10
years. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But then the museum, the you go in there and there's no guards or anything protecting all the things, that was very different than what we have in the States.
Okay.
There's always someone in each room, so, you know, you're getting too close to something.
So the security here is outside the museum in the street. Yeah, right. We're different, you know. What about you, ma'am? What's the most interesting thing you have seen in Egypt? Well, this is Susan Maher. I'm your speaker today. I'm the speaker today. I'm Egyptian, and I was born and lived here in Egypt. And I'm working currently as an English teacher for grade 7 in a British international school. I was just asking them about what's the most interesting thing they have seen in Egypt till now. And I'm just hope you to tell me about it.
I'm Sue, and I'm a retired
I'm
teacher.
Sue too.
Also, that's what I thought I heard.
Yeah.
Anyway, and gosh, I don't know. Everything is interesting. I enjoyed the fact that we actually walked around in the whole, all those pyramids, and also saw the Sphinx from several angles.
Yes.
And I was impressed also that the Sphinx was not as big as I thought it was. You know, when you see pictures of it, it looks bigger. But it was good. It was great to see it.
Yes, sure. What about you, sir?
Hi, my name is Carlo, and I'm impressed with the history. We Americans, I think, tend to, you know, look at AD history, and that's our civilization, and so much more has occurred BC, and that history is, you know, it's just amazing what has been done that we don't know how it was done, or what the people were really like 5,000 years ago to get all this accomplished, you know. So, very impressed with the history.
Yes, I understand. What about you, Matt?
I'm Louis Ching.
Yes.
And I planned this trip about 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the way here is the riot, you know. Arabic spring, right?
Arabic language?
Spring.
Spring. Oh, yeah. Spring. Oh, yeah.
So my son says, you cannot go because it's dangerous. But they say, no matter what, it's much better now, you know. Even it's considered a little dangerous because I just surprised that we have a security guard, you know.
Mm.
And so all that, but I said, they're determined to come because I want to learn the history.
Yeah.
In person, not just read about it, you know.
Mm, yes,
so
you know.
I'm so impressed. Whatever I see, it's better than what I read. So really, you know, impressive.
Great.
Thank you.
You're welcome, dear. What about you, sir?
I'm Brian. I was blown away by how big this place is and and the population density, and then to have it that close to the pyramids, just that was mind-boggling.
Yeah.
I mean, pyramids blow me away, but yeah, to have
The city
reaching up to that, that they didn't stop it before.
Mm.
I mean, because there's so much history there.
Mm. And you know, during the revolution time, even this happened more because we had no security, almost no security. So people, you know, some people did this, you know, they took the advantage and they started to, you know, the absence of security, and they started to build more and expand more toward the pyramid until the government stopped them recently. Finally.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
Yes.
There's
all
something
right
across the street.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty surprising.
Yeah, I know. It's a dangerous and surprising experience, even for us sometimes as Egyptians. There's still, you know, don't you get surprised sometimes by people crossing streets?
I'm born surprised.
All right.
I'm surprised by birth.
By nature. Okay. I'm really happy about this, and I hope you return back home with lots of unforgettable experiences about Egypt and also like wonderful memories about it. Today we are going to speak about Egyptian women, and we're going to know some controversies. But the biggest controversy here really is about the huge gap and difference between the culture in the cities, in the big cities of Egypt. and the villages and rural Egypt, especially rural Upper Egypt. Today, I have two stories of two Egyptian women whom I know personally. I know them, and they know that I'm going to tell you about their stories, and I have even their pictures. They approved to show you the pictures and everything. And these two women, both of them came from Upper Egypt, like villages Upper Egypt, to the south, I mean in the south of Egypt. Before I tell you anything about them, I would like to tell you about me as an Egyptian girl as well. I came from a family we consider it as an open-minded family. We live in Cairo. My family, my uncles, my aunts, all of them from Cairo. My father, as I told you, he's a very supportive and understanding man. I mean, he's a great man. He used to take care of me and my sister because my mom used to work for long hours every day. She's a doctor, and you know, she was working in the central hospital. She had to leave home for long hours every day. So my dad, who had more flexible working hours, my dad is a classic music professor in Conservatory of Cairo. You know Conservatory, the music institution? So he used to take care of me and my sister. He used to do everything at home, even, you know, cleaning and cooking. He never complained about this. He used to, I still remember when he used to, you know, when my mom comes tired and she just says sorry, she's really sorry about this. He used to encourage her and tell her, it's okay, I'm enjoying this. He's not enjoying it. We were shouting all the time, me and my sister. But still, we gave him hard time. But he still, you know, smile at her face and, you know, just remind her of her dream and keep, you know, encouraging her to chase her dream all the time. This was the case for me and for all the girls in our family, like my cousins too. We were given all equal rights like the boys around us. They encouraged us to choose our education, to choose our, even, you know, sports practicing, like to play basketball. He encouraged me to do this. I'm sorry about this. Even to choose our husbands, like I chose my husband myself, my sister Nancy chose her husband too, and they were welcoming this. And so this is really different than the stories you're going to hear, because it's a little bit shocking. However, it's so normal life for us. Like for me, as an Egyptian woman, I never know that there's something like this in my country. And I can tell you that the two stories here that you're going to hear are the dominant situation, like everybody is like this in the south of Egypt. However, we still have villages with all of these problems, because these two girls or two ladies told me that they have seen this before in their villages. For us, it was a big shock, but for them, she said, well, it's not the matter, there are not all the families like this, but they still see this every day in these villages. The two stories here are about two ladies. One of them is called Shaima. Shaima is the lady who's helping me cleaning my home, and she's doing great job. I have her picture here, and I would like to see her picture first before you listen to her story, if you'd like to pass it over. Just this is Shaima, and I want you to read this phrase written under her. It's written in Arabic, Bimitragel, in English letters. Bimitragel, and I will tell you what's the meaning of Bimitragel. She told me to write this because people here call her Bimitragel. Shaima, you are Bimitragel, which is mean worth 100 men. Sorry, 100 men. And this is how we describe strong women in Egypt. Like even when we describe women, strong women, we describe them as men. Yeah. So she said, please write this down. But her name is Shaima. Shaima Bimitragel. Now, how I knew Shaima, I knew her since, I think, 2016. Shaima, after you're going to listen to her story briefly, she moved to Cairo. After the story you're going to hear, she moved to Cairo, and she worked as a nanny in one of the preschools, nursery and preschool, in a nice place called Fifth Settlement. It's outskirts of Cairo, and it's a very, you know, luxurious place. Has lots of preschools and, you know, language preschools and So she went to work as a nanny there. And my cousin is the manager of the place. So I knew her from my cousin because she was working there. She needed, you know, extra work. She asked my cousin if she, you know, needs someone to help her cleaning her home in the weekend. She called me. And since then, I know Shaima and I know everything about her story. What do you think? Is she beautiful? Because she told
me. Yes.
Yeah, she is beautiful. Yeah, she is. She said, take this picture with the makeup on. Well, after listening to the first story of Shaima, I'm going to give you time to ask questions because I know that lots of questions will pop up your mind once you start to hear this tragic story. She's safe now, don't worry. After this, she's safe now and she's fine. Now I'm ready. Mm-hmm. All right. I've told her that paparazzi took you. All right. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Shaima, this is how she told me her story. I just translated her simple Arabic words into simple English words. I came from a very far and poor village south of Egypt. We are four girls and two boys. My father had always preferred boys over girls. He never smiled at my face or told me a nice word. He never called my name unless he wants me to do something for him. I remember that one day my elder brother got sick. My dad was screaming in our faces and said that if my brother passed away of sickness, he will bury me and my sisters alive. And that made us pray every second to keep our brother safe and cure him for not be buried alive. I was forced to get married when I was, shocking, when I was only 12 years old. A child. She told me even that she took her toys with her to her husband's house.
God.
No one even told me what marriage is. I had no idea what will happen to me or what should I do. All that my mother told me is I will serve my husband, cook and clean, just like what I used to do in my parents' house. And then she gave me golden earrings and two new dresses and said these are my husband's gifts, that neither I had the chance to see him before the wedding day nor my parents, and you will know why. My father only met his mother and took the gifts and the dowry. He kept the dowry for himself and he gave me the gifts. I don't want to speak about my wedding night, as it was the biggest nightmare of my life till now. Not only because I was like prey between the jaws of a beast, but also because the man whom I was married to was mentally ill, literally. That's why they didn't want anybody to meet him before. I got divorced 1 month later after my husband tried to kill me one day. And my family discovered later that he was kept in a mental hospital before he was married to me and suffered from schizophrenia. So his parents thought to bring him a wife, this is how they think there, to bring him a wife, a toy, so he may feel better and be normal again. That's very famous. You know, schizophrenia, get him a wife. Easy. I remarried when I was 17 after 5 years of suffering from bullying. This is divorced women stigmatization controversy in rural Egypt. After suffering from bullying from my family because I was divorced, and this title, divorced, brought shame to my family, even though it was not my fault. 5 years later, I got divorced for the second time, thrown in the street with my two little girls. And the reason behind the divorce this time, as he told me, you gave birth to girls and I want a boy. I had to move away and find my way after my family refused to allow me and my two little girls, who were 1 and 3 years old by then, to stay with them. My young sister, who was married to a man from Cairo and moved to live with him there, found me a place where I can stay for a while until I find a job to provide life for my girls and me. This is the place he found her. Her brother-in-law found her this nursery, the preschool. He's a great man, by the way. Her brother-in-law is a great man. Shaima now is safe with her two girls. Nada is 12 years now, and Kinsey is 10 years. They both go to school, and Kikboy is there. I just heard about the problem in her class because she doesn't like boys. All right, anyway, but she's really strong, the younger girl. And they have dreams to be doctors one day. And by the way, she told them about everything because they kept asking about their father, and she told them about everything, and they support their mother a lot. They're really strong and they're very healthy. Would you like to ask any question about Shaimat case? I know so many, you know, question marks.
Her second marriage, was that arranged? Or was that...
Well, it was arranged, but not forced, she told me. It was an arranged marriage, but not a forced marriage like the first one. Any more questions? Yes.
Is that still going on in the South?
Yes. She told me that it's... Well, it's not as much as before, but still, it happens from time to time. Although this is not the legal age, marriage age in Egypt, but I think you will ask about this because she was 12 years old, and this is again is the law here. The law here is the legal marriage age is 18 years old. Mm-hmm. How they do this?
How do
because
they?
Because I've asked her. Well, you know, we have this legal contract that you have to sign in the marriage court. What they do in these villages, because everyone knows each other, you know, they know each other in the street. I mean, everyone knows the families there. So they gather the two families, groom and bride, and they write something like common law contract, just between the families together. They agree about this, they sign it, and then when the girl is 18, became 18 years old, they go to the court and sign a legal one. So it's like a common law marriage just between the families, and this is very accepted there. It's totally acceptable there. Because as long as the old families know about it, it's fine. Any more questions? Don't you want to know the age of her first husband?
Yes.
She was 12, and the man was 32.
Oh, gosh.
And the second husband only 5 years older than her, but the first one. Yes, but horrible. I know. That's why she's Bimi Trogel. She's strong.
Did she remarry?
No, and she's that. Well, I just talked about it. She said, no more men. No. That's it. Well, she's happy now. She's busy. She's busy doing her job and busy also raising her two girls. She's doing a great job. I mean, this woman is really strong. She's been through lots of things, you know, in her life. However, she's still, you know, working and fighting and, yes.
Is she in touch with her family at all?
Her mother, you know, she's calling her from time to time just to make sure that she's fine. Her sister, of course, she's staying with her, you know, beside her in just a, you know, an apartment beside her. Also, her brother-in-law, he's a great man. He helps her a lot and still doing his best to help her and the two girls too.
How old is she now?
She's 24. She's 24. Yes.
What was her mother's position in this?
Well, her mother, well, the problem there, ladies, most of them are really, you know, they're not educated enough. And most of them, but there are, of course, very successful educated families there and women there. And I will tell you about some statistics here. However, her mother, you know, she couldn't stand in front of, you know, her father, because in these places, fathers are the one responsible of arranging marriage for their daughters. Mothers can't really interfere unless she's a really strong lady, because it happens there. The mother stands and, you know, and just protect her children and the girls against all of these things, even the husband. However, her mother is, you know, she's a very kind, but she's not educated and she knows nothing. And she doesn't want to break the cycle, you know, this comfort cycle. She wants the cycle to continue. She said, I was like this and everything is good. Look at yourself and your brothers and sisters. You are fine and you will be fine. However, you know, she's trying to keep in touch with her girl, because the man, I mean, the father, he even told her, you bring us shame twice. I don't want to see you. I don't want to know about you, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is there, we were in Jordan before we got down here, and we were talking with, our guide was telling us about the honor killings that happen, that still happens there. Does that happen here?
Yes, especially in old town, in Upper Egypt, not in Delta. We have farms and farmers, and we have also, you know, it's kind of rural places,
right,
and areas there. However, their culture is still different, but those living in rural Egypt especially are going to go to Luxor and the area, right? There's a place called Qina. Qina is the has the highest, you know, level of honor crimes, like registered honor crimes.
Yeah.
However, things are getting better now. Like the numbers even now is getting, you know, low and reduced than before. Like
more
10 years
eyes
ago,
on it. More people are
seeing. Yes, yes.
And
also because of the internet, you know, this internet and online helped a lot.
Mm.
You know, people started to understand what's going on around and things like that. However, this, like, having, you know, a relationship, like physical relationship outside marriage frame, is still not acceptable even in the big cities.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like, you know, killing, you know, or
right,
things like this. But we still have some, yeah, we still have some cases like this. And of course they go to the jail forever. I mean, the father and all the men, that they go to the jail forever.
Do they facing, you know, legal issue, legal punishment if they do?
Yes,
violence?
Yes, they could be sentenced for 25 years in the jail, or
oh,
even,
now,
or
right?
even, yeah, sure,
oh,
even
okay,
now.
That's better. Stay
yes,
poor, they don't do anything.
They still do this,
yeah,
because they think that we have to do this, even if we'll go to the jail, even if they're going to kill us.
Oh, really?
Still, yeah.
Mm.
Yes, it's honor. Yeah, they think that this is the wrong. Would you like to listen to the second story, or you have
yes,
you still have some questions?
Well, I have a question about divorce,
yeah,
like how easy she got
divorced
twice. So a woman can initiate divorce, because she
yes,
or was it still a common law relationship? So it hadn't actually gotten to age 18.
Even, yeah.
So she,
the first marriage, she couldn't do anything because this was illegal. So
yeah,
he had to divorce her.
Okay.
But the second marriage, also he divorced her, but she had also the right to do this. Well, we have a law called, I know it's not easy to you know, to pronounce, because it has no translation. It's Hola.
Mm-hmm.
And Hola is a law that enable women to divorce themselves.
Mm.
I think this law just, 2003, but before this, well, we had this since forever because it was mentioned in Quran, I mean, which is the basic and the main, you know, resource for Muslims for the, you know, most of the laws, especially those concerning marriage and divorce. However, they never looked at this one, this part, they never take care about this part. Till 2003.
Mm-hmm.
So we started to have this law legally, starting from 2003. But the difference here is, if the woman wants to divorce herself, she has to give up everything, unless she has kids. If she has kids, so the court will force the man, sorry sir, to provide a place for the kids, and for the wife as well. Till the kids are 14, now 14 years, so they just give the choice to the kids to stay with their mother or father. If they choose the mother, so she can stay with them till they finish college years.
Mm-hmm.
The normal divorce, for the normal divorce, of course, she will take all her rights from the man, but it takes so long
ages
in the court. Ages. So you spend lots of money, you know, lawyers and this, you know, court things. You know, I have an experience with one of my friends. She's my co-worker. She's my colleague. She's an English teacher, too, in the school. Teaches grade 5. She divorced herself after suffering for years with her husband, you know, trying to get divorced. He's, you know, he was addicted to some, you know,
drugs,
yeah. And, you know, he didn't want to divorce her. And he said, you just go, but I'm not going to divorce you. Because he was, you know, pushing her for khola, the law of divorcing herself. So her lawyer told her, well, when you go in front of the judge, don't tell him that you suffered with this man at all. Don't tell him about any problem you have faced with this man at all. Because if you mention in front of the judge that you had all these things with that man, all this suffering and bad time with the man, he would refuse khola case, and he will ask you for a legal divorce or just a normal divorce to take your rights. Because if you already suffer with this man, so you have the right for divorce, he has to divorce you. But she has to wait for so long. So he said, if you want to have divorce now, if you want to have khula and divorce, just tell him that I don't feel like I want to live with him. And we had to, train her. just stand up here. I'm the judge. Tell me. So why, her name is Raghda. Tell me, Raghda, why do you want to have divorce from your husband? She goes, because I suffered a lot. No, don't cry. Don't say this. Forget about this. Okay, because I just don't feel like I want to be married anymore. She had to say this. When she went to the court, I think he knows about this, the judge. He told her, why do you want this? She said, he said, try to remember what you have trained. She said, nothing. I just don't feel like it. He said, you don't feel like it and you have a girl. She said, yeah, I don't feel like it. He said, yeah, just write down that she doesn't feel like it and don't blame me after this. She said, this is the only way. So the judge told her, I have a daughter and I understand you. And she had been before in the same situation. So I understand you and I feel you and I will give you khula. I will agree about it. She got divorce after this. And he said that he's going to ask the man to provide a place for the girl, for the little girl.
I recall that when this law came out in the 2003, that actually it was a very, the topic, the hot issue in the Egyptian street for 6 months, that actually the society was divided until religious people had to come on TV for several weeks in a row to verify that this is the right thing to do religiously. That women can just say, I don't want him. He's excellent, but I don't want
him. For no reason.
For no reason. You have the right.
Yeah.
So actually, equal rights for divorce.
Yes, sir.
So you said that khula is in the Quran, is arranged marriage in the Quran?
No, arranged marriage is not in the Quran. Nothing about this.
And what about the so-called mercy killings?
This is more cultural. Well, I tell you the problem. If you really want to know the problem, is it a religious problem or is it a cultural problem? No, it's very cultural.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you something simply. In Egypt here, as a girl, I always face two Arabic words here. So the first one is haram. And haram means religiously prohibited. Which is mean, it's prohibited in Quran, it's clear, but things are prohibited for girls are the same for boys as well. Nothing different. So if they want me as a girl or to prevent me as a girl to do something that's allowed to the boy, they will tell me the other word, which is aib. And aib means culturally inappropriate. So there is always a word to prevent me to do something, either haram or aib. If it's not haram, so it will be aib, you know? So it's more cultural. All right. Are you
and
ready?
It goes back to inheritance. That we don't want the money of the family to go to the girl because she will marry a stranger.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They wanted to keep it for the
family.
So
we marry somebody within the family.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's all about the land. This is the roots of it.
Yeah, especially with the farms. That's why it's more dominated in rural Egypt, because of the farms. And they also want boys to help them farming the farms.
The girls, they don't inherit. This is how they used to say. Religiously they do.
Yeah.
But the money stays within the family, and whatever she wants, we'll give it to her.
This is culture.
This is culture.
There, not in the cities. We take everything. All right. Okay. Now to the second story. I love this picture. Her name is Kamar. Look at her.
No,
well, here she was 5 years old, but now she's bigger. Here she is now in the school.
Oh.
In her school uniform. This is Kamar when she was 5 years old. This is Kamar the last year in the school, and year 8. And I will tell you about her story because it's concerning education.
Is she completely independent? The Shaima?
Yeah, financially.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, completely.
Mm.
Takes care of herself and the two girls. Mm. Her job.
And 24.
I think she's 24.
And the father didn't have to do anything.
No. Nothing. Wow. He's busy now farming his land with his boys. Yeah, well, where is the second picture? Great. Mm-hmm. Well, she's the one with the glasses. She's the one with the glasses on. Yeah. And the one also with the scarf facing the camera in the school. And this is the last picture she took in the school, in her not the last day, but the last year. And I'll tell you why grade 8 was her last year now in the school.
How old is she now?
I think she's 18, maybe. She's 18. Mm-hmm. 19. 19. She's turned 19. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because of the scarf. The scarf makes, you know, well, this is not part of the uniform. I mean, the scarf is not part of the school uniform. This is just, you know, also cultural there to add it. Yeah, because everyone there is wearing the scarf, the hijab scarf. So it's more cultural-wise in these places than religious, you know, thinking. Mm. It's more because everyone wearing this. Mm-hmm. Even Shema told me, everyone is wearing this in my street. I can't go down with my hair because they will look at me and say, well, why she's doing this? She wants to attract men. Oh, yeah, because she's... People there are different. For us, it's fine. It's okay. I mean, it's our choice. But for them, you know, it's a press. It's kind of pressure from the society. More, yes. All right.
Gotta conform.
Come on. We call her Amar because we don't pronounce ka in Egyptian Arabic. So it's Kamar, which means moon. And we say Amar in Egyptian. Amar, this is how we describe a woman with a pretty face. Okay? Yeah, she's the one with the glasses on. I've asked her for this picture especially because I wanted you to imagine her last day in the school. Paparazzi everywhere.
Yes.
They will be very happy. They'll be famous. All right. Kamar is a big example of gender inequality. She's the eldest daughter of our door guard, our parents' door guard, actually, not my home. Kamar loves to read a lot, and she loves to learn and study too, but her favorite hobbies are baking cookies and playing with the street cats and dogs. I still remember her voice, you know, when I was in my parents' house, just running after stray cats and dogs. Kamar's biggest dream is to study to become a doctor or a vet. She's an animal lover, as I told you. Unfortunately, she was forced by her dad to stop going to school. And by the way, her dad is not that, you know, bad man. I'm like, no, he thinks that he is protecting her. That's what he thinks. That's what he thinks, Ayo. That's what he kept telling her. 3 years ago, no, 4 years ago, when she was in grade 8, or 5, I guess now, when she was coming back from her school, getting ready to do her homework, her dad just grabbed her backpack and threw it away and told her in Arabic, Khalas. Kifaya, which means that's it, enough. He or her dad saw, as most of men live in his village south of Giza, that he came from a village south of Giza, but he's working in a building here in Cairo, a building in Cairo. That there is no need for girls to be educated, since they will in the end be wives and mothers and should stay home serving their families. He told her that he had to choose between paying her educational fees or paying for her little brother, although she joins one of the state schools, the governmental one, that's for free. They only pay for some books, uniform, some activities, private lessons, things like this. Kamar broke down and cried, and everyone at my dad's building tried to convince him to let her continue her education. And they all collected money that is more than enough to cover her next 4 years, till year 12, and I remember this day very well. Yeah. However, he took all the money and told my dad later that he saved this money for his son's future because he's going to need it more, because he's the one going to buy the house and going to pay for the marriage, because the problem in these villages, rural Egypt, men pay for most of things, most of the expenses, the marriage expenses. Not like the cities. Here it's half and half, almost half and half. But for them, man, he has to pay for everything. Sadly, Kamar now lives in a small village in El Fayoum, about 70 miles south of Cairo, married with one child. He's less than 1 year old. She stopped reading and baking cookies, but she's still playing with the street cats and dogs. And there's a good news, one good news. She told me to tell you about this at the end. She talked to her husband, who luckily said that he's a good man. She said he's kind. And she told him that she's dreaming about continuing her education one day. He did not refuse. And he said, I understand you. I can let you go to continue education, but let's just wait for our son, you know, to be like 6 years or 5 years old to go to school. Then you can go and continue education. He's not objecting this. She told me this and she made me feel, you know, better about her. She said, he's kind. He takes care of me and my child. You know, he's not that, you know, kinds of man. And it was an arranged marriage, by the way, but it was her choice. Like her dad asked her, he told her that there's a man he wants to propose. Would you like to meet him and see if it will work or not? She saw him and she asked him one question. Do you love cats and dogs?
Oh.
I do love them. She said, I'll marry you. Better than staying at home doing nothing.
How old was she when she got married?
She was 16. Still underage, but she was 16.
Is her husband educated?
Yeah, till high school.
Mm.
What is, when can you leave school in this country? Like, how long is it mandatory for you to stay
well,
in school?
Well, mandatory till, I didn't know this, I thought still till high school, but it's till grade six, which is six.
Just till grade
six?
Yeah.
Nine, that might maybe change.
They said, well, until grade six, then maybe after this, you can, you know, like, for example, if you're going to report this, you can go to the court and report that there's a case, but at the end, till year six, this is mandatory. Yeah, this is the fundamental education that you have to get. However, we still have cases that they just, you know, families take their children out of the school and send them to work. Also in South Africa, the poor places, poor villages, they still do this and nobody report them. So the government knows nothing about these cases.
What level is sixth grade education here like?
It's the basic, like primary. This is the primary years. Primary is 6 years, then 3 years for lower secondary, then 3 years for secondary.
Okay, basically same as the States.
Yes. I have him some statistics, and the first one I would like to start with is about, that's good news here, I kept it to that, percentage of girls educated, especially in universities, and it was a shock even for me. Girls represents 54% of university students.
Wow.
So they are more than boys. Most of them from rural upper region.
Mm.
This is according to 2020.
Wow.
Great. But 56% of masters and PhD holders are females.
Wow.
Yeah.
Percentage of women professors in universities is 48.6% 2018,
wow.
Almost half.
Wow.
Yes. Okay. Political empowerment. Percentage of women ministers in the cabinet has increased. Here is the improvement. Has increased from 6% in 2015 to 20% 2017 to 25% 2018. Highest ever representation of women in the cabinet.
Mm.
Percentage of women in the Egyptian parliament has increased from 2% in 2013, the time when we had the Muslim Brotherhood president. There were 3%. To 15% in 2018. And this is the highest ever women representation in the parliament since women were ever given the right to be elected in 1957. So women were given the right to be elected here in Egypt since 1957. Things were way better for women here before 70s and 80s in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had like declining time and it was, you know, let me tell you what happened to the Egyptians then. You know, it's the petrodollar thing. It's when the time when the Gulf countries started to, you know, discover the petrol and gas.
Saudi Arabia.
Especially, specifically Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. And then this is also the time where lots of Egyptians started to immigrate to these places to work there because the chance to work there was way better. 70s and 80s, this was 1970s, 1980s. They went there to Saudi Arabia, and I've been to Saudi Arabia, and I can tell you, the worst 4 years in my life as a child. I had to go there with my dad because he had work there. So I traveled to Saudi Arabia with my dad. I was 13 years old. 12 years old, and I stayed for 4 years there. The worst 4 years in my life. Nothing was accepted at all as a girl. It's not like now. Things changed recently, the past 2 years. But before this, it was I used to tell my dad, "What Saudi Arabia is the biggest graveyard ever." But nothing was allowed for me to do as a girl. You know, even it wasn't allowed for me to show my face. I was 12 years old and I had to cover my face. This is obligatory. I used to live in Riyadh, the capital, which was so close, you know, that close that nothing is allowed for ladies or girls. And my mom couldn't drive there because it wasn't allowed for women to drive there. Anyway, so when Egyptians traveled there and stayed for a few years or maybe 10 or 12 years, but 15 years mostly, then they came back home. They came back home with money. And they came back home with their new Islam, like we call. The Islam I've taught here in Egypt and I've known here in Egypt was totally different than this that I saw there. You know, the first school day here, there, I remember that I was staying in my class. I was in grade 4, I guess, or grade 5. A student just staying there. And I think that the teacher knew I'm Egyptian or not Saudi because of, you know, my face, my features. She asked me, "What's your name?" I told her. From my accent, she understood that I'm Egyptian. She said, "Are you Egyptian?" I said, "Yes." She said, "Well, I am the religion teacher here, and I think you need to learn about your religion because Egyptians, they have no idea about Islam." I told her, "No, we know everything." And she said, "No, you have to learn the right Islam here." And she kept telling me horrible things that has nothing to do with Islam that we have taught there in Egypt, you know. So some of these people, some of them were just like my parents. They never accepted this, you know, type of conservative and unlogical, you know, ideas. While others, they accepted everything. They accepted money and they accepted the ideas with that, you know. And they came back to start to preach people about how they should do and what they should do and how they should deal. And things started to change badly since then. Till the revolution time. And then we had the Muslim Brotherhood and President Morsi, and Egyptians started to wake up that everything is changing around them. The culture, the Egyptian culture that they have known, nothing. Things started to demolish and they replace it with strange things for us, you know, things from not our culture, nothing to do with Egyptian identity. They wanted to change our identity, you know. And we started to fight this. And finally we are here and we are trying to, you know, gain back our identity and culture. So that's why I'm telling you things are getting better in everything. Numbers and on the street, by numbers and statistics and also in the street itself. I can tell because I've been here during the revolution time and before and after. And now I'm telling you that people even started to be open to new ideas and more acceptable, you know. Right, sir, do you see this well?
Sure,
do you feel this, like people started to accept new ideas, not like before?
Of course, we were just talking about it today, that actually since the 2000 and with the introduction of the internet and that we can have access to information, that people are becoming very inquisitive and they question everything, and you have more than one source. Yes, like actually I can, if I don't like your opinion or if I'm doubting, skeptical about your opinion, I get to your opinion, and then I start to make my own opinion.
Yeah.
So yes, and then there are some radical thoughts that
still
they are actually changing. People are not accepting it anymore. They're questioning it and they make up their own minds.
Mm-hmm.
It is access to information that was not.
And it's about important topics. I mean, it's not even, you know, just that simple things, but important and main fundamental topics that we never imagined that we can, you know, we would have more than opinion about it. So that, and both of opinions are, you know, so different, and you can choose whatever you know suits you.
Can I ask?
Yeah.
Is that going on in the South now, is, you know, when people are probably less educated, more poor.
Yes, I speak mainly about South because most of the problem, actually, I don't know why. Actually, we have this here in the city as well, but it's more concentrated there. So things are changing even in the South. And now you can see people south of Egypt, they speak of women mainly. They are leadership, they're leaders, and they speak about, you know, their rights, and they start to even inform other ladies about their rights, and they enlighten their ways. So things are changing here and there. And by the way, there is a strategy launched in Egypt 2017, and it's adopted by President Sisi. And the aim of this strategy, it's called the Women Empowerment Strategy, I think. Yeah. Focuses on, yes, here it is, National Strategy for Empowerment of Egyptian Women 2030. And this strategy is mainly focusing on four pillars: political empowerment and leadership, economic empowerment, social empowerment, and protection. And they established nine centers in south of Egypt, actually. It's just for women, called women host centers. So there, for example, if there's a woman like facing domestic violence, she can go there, get protected, and they provide her a place to stay, safe place to stay, education, psychological and psychological mainly, therapy. So things are getting better, and they now focus on south of Egypt, to develop south of Egypt, especially women in south of Egypt.
The law is very much today giving women their rights.
Yeah, they're not biased against.
But the problem is that they are so reluctant and afraid to report a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
They don't report it.
Yeah, and this is
because they will be denounced. They will be bring disgrace to their families.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of abuse, a lot of harassment, a lot of things happen, but they just keep it and they don't report it, especially when the community is too small, because
everyone knows each other. Yeah,
yeah.
But you know, things also start.
But
to
it
change.
Is.
Yeah.
But it is improving.
And because of the internet and again online, this helped a lot.
Yeah.
You know, they just go and they see people, how they deal, how they do things, like how they come over problems like this. It helps a lot.
And see around the world how it
works. Yes, true. Any more questions?
I have a question
here
about Amr.
Her
father stopped her at the grade 8.
Mm-hmm.
Does she have brothers, other brothers that continued education?
Yeah, her brother actually now in university.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's studying architecture in Trinity.
The reason I'm asking is that I had the same experience with actually the doorman in our building when I was, he was my age, and he was actually a very good student, and all the girls were good too. But they all stopped for financial reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And they all stopped because they didn't see hope in getting employed one day. Because that they are the children of.
Yeah,
this
is a good reason. Yeah,
that,
true. One of the reasons.
So they all of that. Yasser is actually 2 years younger than me, and I know he was just, and he was an ace. I was very surprised that he stopped, but he stopped because he said, "I'm going to help my father. What are my chances, even if I get a degree?" So that's what. That's something that happened.
This is for the boy.
The boy and all the girls. So the reason I was asking the question is it. Because of financial, because what the experience I had, they were five, but they all stopped.
Well, he told her it's financial, but it wasn't financial.
I was just, this is another story,
yeah,
but I was just thinking, sometimes it is because they don't see any hope because of their social background. So they decide, I'd rather just help my father.
Future.
How am I going to get a job and I'm from this family? That's how.
What's the unemployment rate?
I have it here. I think it's 24. Yeah, here we are.
Officially.
Do you have it?
14.
Yeah.
But unofficially, 25.
A woman unemployment rate is 21.4.
But this is, yeah. Because
that's for women or for
this is for women.
That's
for women. 21.4.
But it's double this number.
Okay, for women, and then the official. So the numbers you talked about were overall?
Overall, but this is double this number because this is the number about the one that are eligible. Half, they don't even look for jobs. So this it's double this number, but that's the official number.
And I have another number here, 18% female heads of households of the total families in Egypt. 18% female heads of households of total families.
Wow.
In
Egypt.
Yes. No man. No, single mothers, single.
So I have a question. I was expecting to see you with a head covering. Are you Islamic?
Am I Muslim? Yes, I am.
Yeah.
But no, it's about, oh, okay. So expect that this
is
kind of...
Are the religious expectations on women,
I will tell
are they more liberal here in Egypt than other countries nearby that are
Well, in Egypt,
Muslim?
The situation is so different than any, anywhere else. However, for me as a Muslim girl, I never convinced about being this part of my religion by any way or anyhow. This is my religion that I respect it. However, I respect other views about it. It's all about interpretation of few verses in Quran. Now, Quran consists of 114 chapters, each chapter with many verses. The whole idea starts when they started to explain verses about covering up, not only for the hair, but it's about being modest, like wearing just like you're being modest, you know, that's all. But the interpretation, the different interpretation that goes about this matter, made people are so different about it. Like some of them think that God asked women to cover, even to cover her hair, and this is like an order from God to women to be more decent. Others believe that this was during the time of the Arabs and Islam when it appeared in Arabian Peninsula, because it was part of their, uniform or part of their, traditional clothes to cover the hair, even for the men, by the way. If you've just seen the Bedouin people, they cover their hair because of the sun too. So it was more traditional. However, in Egypt here, and I can tell you, that some women wearing it, because they do convince that this is part of the religion and they want to practice the religion freely the way they see, and I don't blame them because this is the way they see it and they are totally free to do this. And I have so many friends, they wear the scarves and they're really just, they're normal people and really nice, and I do respect them a lot. And another type like me, they are not convinced about the idea at all, and they choose not to wear it, and they still be respected from people, mostly because some people from different culture, they look at us as if we are doing this because we want, to attract men and things like this. However, I've never faced any problem about it, honestly, not in my work, not in school, not in university, not in my family, never. But I still hear stories for veiled girls face problems because they choose to wear scarves, and unveiled girls also facing problems because they choose not to wear the scarf. So they will find always a reason to be oppressed.
So if you were traveling, traveling in the South where it's more traditional.
Yeah. No, it's fine. They would just deal with me as if I'm a tourist, They know that I'm not from them, but if I'm not one of them, However, we have lots of girls now. I've seen them in Minya. Minya is a city south of Egypt. I've traveled to Minya about 3 months ago. I went to, to discover a place. I tried to act as a tour guide like I used to be before. I missed this, feeling.
Well, you're a tour guide.
Yes. You weren't here?
I missed the first part, yeah.
Yeah, I used to be a tour guide before the revolution by Abercrombie and Kent.
Really?
But a very humble one, not like you, but I didn't have the chance to develop myself like this. But anyway, when I travel there, they do that as if I'm a tourist. Sometimes they don't recognize that I'm Egyptian. Can you believe it? They talk in English with me. Hi, hello. I said, I keep just, you know, answering Arabic. She knows Arabic. No, I don't know Arabic. I am Egyptian already. And this is my language. You're Egyptian. They just look at me as if, because they have no idea about the outer world. You know, they do know that there are girls that can just walk down the streets like me and they are Egyptians. They have no idea.
Because actually the question was raised, that is one of the most controversial questions.
Yeah.
And how big is the actually... or how they cut your, the way you view the veil, how big is the percentage of women today that they view, they share the same view like you, yourself?
Like mine?
Yeah, yeah.
And they are there to say it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can't tell you because some of them are...
No, I know. I'm just...
There
I'm,
to say it.
Yeah.
But here, because I think it's...
I worked in school and I lived it and I...
Yeah.
So I... But I'm
Egyptian
just,
school. Oh, yeah, you told me American
yes,
system.
Yes, so
school.
I know I've lived, and in, I mean when I mean I worked at school. In schools, the society, it is more female.
Yeah.
Female, like we were like 10% men, and the rest they are
same
old.
In my school.
So I had a lot. So I know, but I'm just asking to know your opinion.
Yeah, well, they're a lot. I'm a woman, I can tell. They're a lot. But they don't, they are not there to announce this, you know, public. But they're a lot.
It is big.
Yeah, it's big.
It is like...
Even those wearing the...
I could say like 30% of women today,
yeah,
they adopt the same, actually.
You know, some of them tell... Yeah, like one of my friends, she told me, well, nobody obligated me to put it on. However, I know that if I'm not just wearing it, all my family just putting the same veil, so they will look at me as if I'm something strange, and I don't want to feel this. That's why I'm wearing it. But she, you know, keeps wearing the Thai jeans and the Thai thing. She told me I'll find my way.
About birth control or abortion, are they very common here?
Yeah, birth control actually encourages people for birth control. Yet, that you know, people in, also in the South, we have the same problem. They love to have lots of children, and then they take them out of the school and send them, you know, in the streets. And for abortion, well, it's accepted for some cases. Some cases, like medical cases, or things like this, but still not so accepted if it was the choice of a woman. However, my cousin, she chose to do this, you know, and she announced this, and nobody, you know, criticized her for her decision, because she was, you know, she had two girls, and she was about to get divorced from her husband, and she didn't want to have any more children, so nobody blamed her for this. So for the cities, it's something normal. It's not totally legal, so you have to go to certain doctors who are, you know, well known that they help women in this case. In South Egypt, is totally, they're totally against it. So women still do it, but you know, they try to hide this somewhere. Yeah, they find it for a secret way or something. Yes. Any more questions? Real good. Oh, really? Oh, I enjoyed my speech to the point I didn't realize the time. All right, any more questions if you wish?
Yeah. Enjoy it too.
Yeah, that was wonderful.
Thank you. He told me yesterday, he called me and he said, well, they're going to be very nice group. Wait for them. I'm taking advantage of talking with them. They're really nice. So, yes, you are. Very nice. Thank you for today. Can we take a picture together?
Of
what about
course.
This?